Okay, we're getting back to Balaam again tonight. And one thing I did notice as I was going through the study and finishing up the outline, I was going through all the usages of the word Balaam to make sure I didn't miss anything. And I noticed something here in Joshua 13 and verse 22 that I wanted to mention. I put this back in the outline in a place where it would fit, which we have already passed. So I found we talk about how the fact how Balaam is a prophet or was a prophet, and how he was not exactly God's prophet, but God used him. And here's a verse that basically tells us that he wasn't God's prophet. It tells us that he was a soothsayer. If you look in Joshua 13 and verse 22, it says, Balaam also, the son of Beor, the soothsayer, did the children of Israel slay with the sword among them that were slain by them. This is the only place I know of where it calls Balaam a soothsayer, but a soothsayer would be like the type of guy like a necromancer or like somebody in the occult or something like that, not exactly a prophet of the Lord. But so let's get back there to Numbers 22 now. Numbers 22, last time we left off showing how Balaam had. The Lord had told Balaam you could go ahead and go with the people of Moab, with the princes of Moab, if they came to him, and Balaam didn't waste any time heading out, and he got on his ass and he started riding, and the angel stood in the way, and the ass turned off to the side and went off into the field, and Balaam smites the ass and gets the ass back on the road. And this is where we left off. So now we're in verse 22, and now the angel of the Lord stands in a path. And there's walls on each side. So before the ass had a wide open spaces, and now the Lord's starting to constrict the way. Numbers 22 and verse 24 says, "But the angel of the Lord stood in the path, or in a path of the vineyards, a wall being on this side, and a wall on that side." So if you think about this, I always like to draw out practical parallels. Balaam had been traveling on that broad and wide way that leadeth to destruction, right? We read about that in Matthew 7 and verse 13. And that had been the path that Balaam and his ass were on, heading on a wide road where there was plenty of room to stray about one way or the other. And this is generally the way of the wicked. They get to go pretty much where they want. Their path is wide and many, many different avenues on that path. There's lots of different roads, and they all lead to hell except for one, and that's the straight and narrow one. Matthew 7 and verse 13 says, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat." So Balaam was on the broad and the wide road, but now God tightens up Balaam's path by putting walls on both sides of Balaam so that he and the ass have little leeway of where they can go. It says there in Proverbs 21 and verse 1 that the Lord turns the heart of the king as he does the rivers of water. And this is what God was doing with Balaam here. God was directing Balaam's way, and like the banks of a river guide where the river can go, well, the Lord was constricting the path so Balaam had less room to move around there. It says in Proverbs 21 and verse 1, "The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will." So the Lord is turning Balaam where he wants him to go. Now think about this. If God can't trust us with freedom, then he'll take it away to cause us to walk in his paths. And isn't that how it works with children? Isn't that how it works politically? If you have freedom, if you abuse that freedom, then the freedom gets taken away. And that's what's happened. Why do you think we have the type of government that we have, where we're losing freedom every year after year, and now we don't have, I mean, you can't build a house without a permit, you can't cut hair without a permit, you can't style hair without a permit, you can't groom a dog without a permit. Everything in our lives is being constricted down, and that's because we're a people that have turned from the Lord, and when we turn from the Lord, he takes our freedoms away. And it works that way with kids too. If you can't trust your kids with freedom, then you have to take it away, and you have to treat them more like inmates than you do children. And this is basically what God's doing. He's taking Balaam's freedom to go wherever he wants away. Okay, so the ass sees the angel of the Lord and he swerves into a wall to avoid him, crushing Balaam's foot, and causes Balaam to smite the ass again. Look at Numbers 22 and verse 25. So they're on this narrow way. I mean, just think about being Balaam. So you're riding on this ass, and you can't see anything in the way, and all of a sudden the ass just wanders off into the field, and Balaam's like, "What are you doing?" He starts smacking the thing, "Get back on the road." So he gets back on the road, and they get in a narrow place, and the ass is walking along it. Wham! And rams right up against the stone wall and smashes Balaam's ankle against the stone wall. And you can imagine what Balaam's thinking, because he doesn't see anything going on here. Get back on the road! And he's smacking the ass again. It says there in verse 25, "And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she thrust herself under the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall, and he smote her again." You feel bad for the poor ass, because the ass is just doing what anybody would do when you see an angel with a sword drawn ready to lop your head off. Naturally, the ass is trying to avoid the evil here, and Balaam is smacking her for it, telling her to get going. So having already warned Balaam to no avail, God now inflicts some pain on him. So that's kind of how God does things. And God is just, he's a parent. He's called a father, and that's how parents do things. You get a warning, first of all, and then you get some pain. And this is what's happening with Balaam. First, they just went off into the way and wasted a little bit of Balaam's time. Now Balaam gets his foot crushed against the wall. So the Lord is slowly increasing the punishment to try to get Balaam to do what he wants him to do. But Balaam is unfazed by his crushed foot, and he smites the ass, and he forges ahead anyway. He doesn't even stop to think. He didn't think about when the ass, for some unknown reason, went wandering off into the woods. That didn't cause him to think. Then the ass smashes his foot against a rock wall. That doesn't cause him to change his mind. Kind of sounds like if you, no matter what you do to a fool, you can't get the foolishness out of him. And that's what we're told in Proverbs 22 and verse 2. That's the thing with a fool. Some people, there's nothing you can do for them. You can reason with them. That certainly doesn't work. You can threaten them. That doesn't work. You can beat them. That doesn't work. Yeah, some people, they're just unreasonable. Proverbs 27 and verse 22 says, "Though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him." Who knows what a mortar is? Anybody? You do. Anybody? You kids know what a mortar is? Do you have a mortar, Andrea? No? Well, a mortar and a pestle, a mortar is a little bowl, and a pestle is like a little, not a rod, but a thicker piece.
A dowel.
Yeah, like a wooden dowel, yep. Or sometimes they're made out of stone, too. And you'd put wheat or something in there, and you'd grind it up in the pestle. You'd take the handle part, and you'd smash the grain up there, or whatever it is. I think people would even use those back in when pharmaceuticals were handmade. They would crush up the
herbs.
Yep, crush them up. Yep, and then roll them into pills. So anyway, what the Lord is saying here is, if you take a fool, as it were, and put him in a mortar and grind him to pieces, his foolishness still won't depart from him. And we've seen some people like that. Some people have kids like that. It just doesn't seem like it. You just beat the tar out of them, and they just don't seem to get it. They just go back to doing whatever they were doing anyway. And this is what's happening with Balaam here. And this isn't the last time that the Lord's going to deal with him either. But see, with a wise man, one word of reproof will be more helpful to him, more influential to him, than 100 stripes will to the back of a fool. Look at Proverbs 17 and verse 10. This will tell you a lot about yourself or somebody else. If you want to know if you're a foolish man or a wise man, if somebody gives you a word of correction, if you accept the word of correction and change if the person's right, then you're a wise man. If you scoff at the correction and say, I don't need to hear what he has to say, what dad or mom has to say, or whoever, and you end up getting yourself into trouble and getting some type of punishment, whether it's natural punishment or with the law or whatever, and you still harden your neck, well, you're definitely a fool. And that's what this verse is talking about. Proverbs 17 and verse 10. It says, "A reproof entereth more into a wise man than 100 stripes. into a fool. Now you'd think that 100 stripes would enter into anybody. A stripe, when somebody would lay you down and whip you, you know, on your bare back, that would be extremely painful. There are countries that still do that. Saudi Arabia does that. People get sentenced all these terrible amount of lashes for different crimes. But anyway, you would think that 100 stripes would really make somebody, would cause them to reconsider their ways. Not a fool, though. As soon as the pain's over, as soon as the wounds are healed up, he's going to go back to do the same stupid thing he was doing before. But a wise man, all it takes is just one word from somebody to say, hey, you know what, you're really heading in the wrong direction there. You probably should consider your ways. And that guy, he straightens himself up and he doesn't need any stripes. But not a fool. And this is the case with Balaam. Now notice how Balaam punishes his ass when he gets chastened for his own rebellion. See, Balaam is getting punished for his own sin, but he takes it out on the ass. He doesn't accept the punishment himself, of course, because he's a fool. He takes it out on somebody else. And we should always take care to not transfer our punishment to others who are undeserving of it. And we all tend to do this, especially if we're in families or we have people that are close to us. It's pretty easy to do that. It's pretty easy to be harsh on your wife when you come home from work and you just were reprimanded, or project was late, or you know, your boss is getting on your case or something, and you come home and take it out on the wife or on the kids. Or you had a bad day and you come home and your kid does some tiny little infraction, and you go and either yell at him or beat the tar out of him or something, when really he didn't, it's not his fault. You're just taking out your frustration on somebody else. This is what Balaam's doing. So the next time you do that, the next time you take out your frustration on somebody else because you had a bad day, remember, you're acting like Balaam. So now the Lord tightens it up again. The angel of the Lord now stands in a narrow place where the ass can't try to get around him. Let's look at verse 26, Numbers 22 and verse 26. Balaam still hasn't figured it out. The original commandment was, thou shalt not go with them, but he hasn't figured it out. The Lord has been trying to thwart Balaam's attempts over and over again, and Balaam just keeps on pressing forward. Verse 26, and the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place where was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. Now the ass can't go anywhere. He's stuck. He's either going to stop or else he's going to run into the angel and take his life into his hands. God has made it impossible for Balaam to get past the angel. So, like I said before, God takes away the freedom. Now Balaam has no freedom. There's absolutely nowhere to go. God has basically forced his hand to where he has to stop now. There's no choice. God is in essence telling Balaam, hither shalt thou come, but no further. We read about that in Job 38 and verse 8. This is what the Lord says to the waves of the sea, because the Lord's in control of all things. And the Lord tells those waves that they don't pass the bank, not the banks, but they don't pass the shore. You notice those waves, you can watch those things come crashing in all day long, and they never get past the shore. God says, hitherto shalt thou come, but no further. Job 38 and verse 11. And said, hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed. Balaam was a proud man, and Balaam was going to be stayed. God says, that's it. You're not going past this point. Now, if we continue to rebel against God and the knowledge that he's given us, he'll take away our freedom entirely. Look at this verse in Isaiah. In Isaiah 5 and verse 13. Freedom's a gift from God, but if you can't exercise your freedom in a godly way, the Lord will take it away. The Lord says, my people are gone into captivity because they have no knowledge. That may be the verse that I'm going to now. Isaiah 5. Yeah, that is the verse I'm going to. Isaiah 5 and verse 13 says, therefore my people are gone into captivity because they have no knowledge. And their honorable men are famished, and their multitude dried up with thirst. If we were wise as Americans, we would consider our ways and realize that we are experiencing this verse. We are slowly going into captivity. We live in a police state, pretty much. There's surveillance everywhere, or phone calls, or emails, or text messages, everything that we do. Slowly, they're closing the walls in on us, and we're going to be in complete captivity one of these days. There's no doubt about, well, I shouldn't say there's no doubt, but it certainly seems that way. And why is it? Because we have no knowledge. We have no knowledge of God. We've turned our backs on the Lord, and like it says in Hosea, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Eventually, God just gives you what you want. Fine, you want to be a slave? You want to be a slave to your sin? Okay, well, go ahead. You can be. That's what he gives us. So the ass, seeing the angel in front of her, falls down, and Balaam smites her with his staff. Now Balaam's really irritated. First, the ass went off into the woods somewhere, and Balaam whacks it in the head. And then the ass rams up against a stone wall and smashes Balaam's leg, and then he smacks him again, or her again. Now the ass finally decides she's just had enough, and she stops, and now Balaam's going to hit her with his staff. Numbers 22 and verse 27. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam, and Balaam's anger was kindled, and he smote the ass with a staff. Now there's a time to fight and a time to surrender, right? We read about in Luke 14, verse 31 and 32, whenever you're going into a fight, it's good to count the cost to figure out if you actually want to fight this war or not. The ass has counted the cost and realizes this is no time to fight. This is a time to just bow down and submit and to surrender. Look at Luke 14 and verse 31 through 32. Luke 14, 31 through 32. This is what Jesus taught us to do, count the cost. It says, or what king going to make war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. This is what the poor little ass is doing, desiring conditions of peace. She just gives up and says, okay, that's it. I'm surrendering at this point. The fool Balaam doesn't, he doesn't, still doesn't realize what's going on. We're told in Ecclesiastes 3:8 that there's a time for war, a time of war and a time of peace, and the ass has chosen peace. Now to continue with the foolish Balaam would have been the ass's destruction. Look at Proverbs 13 and verse 20. Like I said, the ass shows all kinds of prudence. The ass was so much wiser than Balaam. Really put Balaam to shame. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. Says, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. So the ass was playing with destruction here, going on with this fool Balaam, but the ass finally has enough and says, you know what, I'm not going any further. The ass has realized it was time to surrender. However, the ass riding on the ass was not so wise. He hadn't figured that out yet. And you say, oh, you shouldn't call Balaam an ass. You're cussing. That's mean. Well, look at the definition here. An ass, when you're talking about it in the secondary sense, when it's a term of reproach, is an ignorant fellow, a perverse fool, a conceited dolt. And a dolt is a dull, stupid fellow, a blockhead, numbskull. So that was a pretty good, accurate description of Balaam. He was an ass, a dolt, a stupid fellow, a blockhead, a numbskull. He was going against the word of the Lord repeatedly. Now, this move, of course, by the ass did not go unpunished. The ass is trying to do Balaam a service here and not getting him killed by the angel, but of course, no good deed goes unpunished, as we're told, as we've heard so many times. So Balaam intensifies his wrath towards his ass, hitting her with his staff. Before, it just said he smote her. This time it specifically says he smote her with the staff. So with like his rod that he was holding. So now he's really trying to inflict some pain on this ass of his. Now the ass was wise, not wanting to continue on with this furious madman. Apparently this ass had been reading the book of Proverbs, because as I will show here, this was a very wise ass, no pun intended. Proverbs 22, 24, 20, 24 through 25. Proverbs 22, 24 through 25. So the next time somebody calls you a wise ass, then they may be complimenting you. I don't know, because this was a wise ass for sure. Proverbs 22:24-25. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. The ass is not going with a furious man anymore. We're told, yeah, that's the verse I was thinking of. Make no friendship with an angry man. Now, doing the right thing and not running with the wicked sometimes will cause us to incur their wrath. And this is what the poor little ass is experiencing. He's decided not to go with the wicked anymore and to surrender, and now he's getting wrath from his master. Look in 1 Peter 4:3-4. And this happens. This will happen to us. Especially if you grew up there, out there in the world, and then you decide that you're not going to go and do the same things that your friends are doing anymore. You're not going to party with them and be a rabble-rousing fool out there. And they'll turn on you, just like Balaam did on the ass. 1 Peter 4 and verses 3 through 4. It says, for the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. In this case, Balaam didn't just speak evil, he did evil to the ass. Poor little guy, really incurred Balaam's wrath. The ass was suffering reproach for doing the right thing, but she took it patiently. And we're going to see the ass's response to Balaam. The ass took it patiently. I'm telling you, every one of us can learn from this ass. This ass was incredibly wise and humble and patient. Really was a model of godliness. Of all things to model yourself after an ass, but the ass really would put us to shame. We're blessed when we suffer for righteousness' sake. This is what was happening to the ass. 1 Peter 4 and verse 14. It says, if ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you, and their part he's evil spoken of, but in your part he's glorified. So if anybody ever reproaches you because you're a Christian, because you follow Christ and keep his commandments, be happy about it. When your professor gives you a hard time, be happy about it. Seriously, you got to thank God for that. You're being reproached for the name of Christ. You're being a witness for Christ, and that's a blessing. So anytime somebody attacks you, I mean, I just take it as a feather in my cap. The more people that attack me and say terrible things about me, it doesn't bother me any. I get it all the time. I mean, I have quite a presence on the internet these days and constantly getting it. It doesn't just water off a duck's back. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. If, like Pastor Boffy said one time, if you're not taking flack, it's probably because you're not over the target. So if you're over the target, you're going to catch flack. Matthew 5:10-12. This is why if people that were attacking you would read their Bibles, which that's why they're attacking you, because they're not reading their Bibles. But if they would, they would realize that attacking you is not the way to go. Because they're really blessing you rather than cursing you. They think they're cursing you, but it's actually a blessing. Matthew 5:10-12. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner, of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. So when we're persecuted, when we're reviled, we're blessed. That's like God saying, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Every time some enemy of yours calls you a name, says you're some kind of a charlatan, and greedy of filthy lucre, or whatever, all the other stupid things that people say about me and worse, it's just a blessing. It's as if they're saying, God bless you, brother. It's the same thing. They just don't realize it. So now the Lord opens the ass's mouth, and she asks Balaam why he's smitten her these three times. Numbers 22 and verse 28. Now let me ask you, what would you do if Balaam was riding on your back and you were trying to save Balaam and he beat you three times? Would you just humbly and meekly say, Balaam, why did you hit me 3 times? Probably not. You'd probably be like, you son of a whatever. What are you doing? But listen to what the ass says here. Numbers 22 and verse 28. And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said unto Balaam, what have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these 3 times? Now this was the first time in recorded history that a dumbass spake. But it would not be the last time. If you just turn on your TV, you'll find herds of dumbasses speaking all the time. But this is the first time in recorded history that a dumbass spake. And I'm not cussing. This is what the Bible says. The Bible says precisely this. Look in 2 Peter 2 and verse 16. Second Peter 2 and verse 16. This is speaking of Balaam. It says, but was rebuked for his iniquity, the dumb ass speaking with man's voice forbade the madness of the prophet. So the ass is a little donkey, and donkeys normally can't talk, so they're dumb. That's what dumb means. Dumb doesn't mean stupid. It means you can't talk. So he was a dumb ass. Normally asses can't talk, but this one, the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she spake. Now notice how the ass was more righteous than Balaam. She didn't reproach or revile Balaam for beating her unjustly, did she? She could have. I mean, that would have been the response that we would have had. Revile back at him. Call him names or whatever. Or try to, you know, knock him off your back and kick him while he's down or something. You ever been kicked by a donkey or a horse? You'd probably put a number on Balaam. But even the little ass didn't do that. She's a good example for us not to revile back when we're persecuted. Look at 1 Peter 2, 21 through 23. Like I said, model your life after Balaam's dumb ass, and you'll do all right. 1 Peter 2, 21 through 23. Can you imagine a preacher telling you to model your life after a dumb ass? But that's what exactly what I'm telling you. Model your life after this dumb ass. 1 Peter 2, 21 through 23. As soon as I find it, I'll read it. 1 Peter 2, 21 through 23. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again, but when he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. So this ass was following in the footsteps of our Lord Jesus Christ, being persecuted, he blessed. Being reviled, he didn't revile back. Or she didn't revile back. She spoke back kindly to Balaam. Look in 1 Peter 3 and verse 9. It says, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. This is probably one of the hardest things to do as a Christian. When somebody reviles you, not to revile back. When somebody calls you names or says something mean about you or untrue about you or makes fun of you, our natural inclination is not to bless them and to be nice to them. We want to get back at them. And you want to try to say something even meaner to them to make them look worse or make them feel worse. Husbands and wives are pretty good at this whenever they fight. Not a good idea. It's not acting like Christ when we do these things. Look in Matthew 5 and verse 44. I don't know if it was Winston Churchill. I think it was he. Might not have been. But it was somebody anyway, said that there's always time to add in a word. But there's never time to take one back. So think twice before you speak, because words hurt and sometimes they can have long-lasting implications and you can never take them back. Matthew 5 and verse 44. Jesus said, but I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. This is pretty much what the ass was doing to Balaam. that Balaam was persecuting him, her, using her, treating her very wrongfully, and the ass turns around basically with a soft answer and says, "Why did you hit me 3 times?" That's all the ass said to him. She meekly asks him, "Why did you hit me 3 times?" Now she could see the angel because God gave her eyes to see. You know, the ass's eyes were open spiritually. The ass could see the angel on the way. But she didn't know that Balaam was a spiritually blind fool who couldn't see the angel ready to kill him. The ass doesn't know this. The ass sees the angel, and the ass is probably wondering, what in the world is wrong with Balaam? I mean, I'm stopping here short of being killed by this angel, and I'm getting beaten for it. What is wrong with Balaam? Sometimes children of God naively think that reprobates can see the same things they can and therefore wonder why they act so wickedly. There are other people out there, people that are not saved by the grace of God, they can't see the same things that we see. And sometimes we wonder why they act the way that they act. Why can't you see it? Why do you believe in evolution? How can you believe in something so stupid as that? Why can't you see the fact that the creation demands that there's a creator, that the heavens declare the glory of God? It's because they can't see it. They're spiritually blind. Why do they act so wickedly? And we wonder, how could somebody do that? Well, it's because they don't see what we see. Now Balaam answers the ass and tells her that he hit her because she mocked him, and if he had a sword, he'd kill her. Look in Numbers 22 and verse 29. Numbers 22 and verse 29. So the ass asked Balaam, "Why'd you hit me 3 times? And Balaam said unto the ass, "Because thou hast mocked me. I would there were a sword in mine hand, for now would I kill thee." So Balaam says, "I hit you because you mocked me, and if I wish I had a sword, because if I did, I'd kill you right now." That's pretty nice to act towards an animal that just saved your life. Note, you're never so blind and stupid as when you're arguing with a dumbass. Just remember that. Balaam is arguing with a dumbass here. So think about that the next time you're arguing with a dumbass. You're acting blind and stupid like Balaam. Of course, I'm speaking of a different type of dumbass than Balaam was arguing with. Now, the ass's patience is now being tested. She humbly besought her master's favor, but he responds back with vitriol. She's a good example for us to serve our masters respectfully, not just the good and gentle ones, but the froward as well. Look in 1 Peter 2, 18 through 19. It is easy to serve our masters whenever they're nice to us. It's easy to, you know, do whatever your boss tells you to when he's really nice and speaks to you kindly and appreciates what you do. But what about when you have a boss that doesn't treat you nicely? Well, the Bible tells us we're still supposed to submit to him. We're still supposed to do what he says. The Bible even teaches that if a woman has a husband that obeys not the gospel, she's still supposed to treat him respectfully, honor him, and submit to him. And then her conversation may end up converting him, which is in the beginning of this 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter 3 and verse, I'm sorry, 1 Peter 2, 18 and 19. It says, "Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. For this is thankworthy if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully." So, this is thankworthy toward God. God is extremely happy whenever we suffer with an employer. Like, I remember when you first started working for the farmer guy, and he wasn't very nice to you, and yet you suffered it and you stuck it out, and now you get along with him pretty well, right? That's sometimes maybe. Yeah. That's kind of how it goes. Sometimes if you kill them with kindness, they'll end up being nice to you. But if you would have had an attitude like most teenagers have, he would have probably fired you for one thing. But you certainly wouldn't, you know, have ended up having a job all this time and having a good relationship with your employer. But anyway, this is thankworthy. If you suffer grief wrongfully from a froward boss, well, that's a plus in God's eyes. And this is what Balaam's ass was doing. So Balaam is showing what a fool he is, threatening to kill his ass for no good reason. He had no reason to kill this ass. The ass was trying to save his life, and he's threatening to kill him. Look at some of these verses here. Balaam's wrath is presently known, just like a fool. Proverbs 12 and verse 16. You'll know a fool. When he gets mad, you're going to hear about it. It doesn't take any time at all, and you'll hear about it loud and clear. Proverbs 12 and verse 16. It says, a fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame. See, when a prudent man gets upset, he holds it in. He keepeth it in till afterwards. It's going to be a shameful thing if he blows up and acts like an idiot. So he's going to hold it back. But not the fool. You're going to know about it right now, as soon as he's upset about something. You ever see people like that out in public? Like you go to some kind of a DMV or something like that, and some guy, he's upset at the line's too long or whatever, and boy, you're going to know it right now, and he's going to make a scene, and he's going to start yelling and screaming or making vile comments to the government workers or something. And I was at the post office the other day. Line, I mean, probably 50 feet long, no joke. And I didn't say anything. I was trying not to be a fool, but I'm thinking, you know, what kind of a private institution do you ever go to where you'd have a line 50 feet long and the employees are just taking their good old time? I mean, they're just, I mean, you wouldn't have known that there was a line halfway through that whole building. They're just, I mean, I give it to them. They're patient and they're calm. They're just going about their business just as slowly as they would if nobody was there. But anyway, there were some people that weren't real happy about it. And they were storming off, and one woman's yelling at a guy. She thought the guy was cutting in line. And here he was just going up to drop off his mail or something. She blurts out, like, you can't cut in line. A fool's wrath is presently known. And she looked like a total fool when she realized what was going on there. Anyway, learn all kinds of things at the post office. Proverbs 29:11 says that a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it until afterwards. Proverbs 29 and verse 11. A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. You're not showing any strength when you can let somebody have it and fly off the handle at somebody. That doesn't show 1 ounce of strength. Anybody can do that. The strong man is the one that keeps it in, holds it back. Maybe you get in your car and you start ranting and raving about the post office or whatever, but you keep it in till afterwards if you're a wise man and if you have inner strength. But Balaam doesn't know how to rule his own spirit. Proverbs 25 and verse 28. Proverbs 25 and verse 28 says, he that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. No, Balaam, as soon as that little donkey veers off the path, Balaam's hitting her. And then she smashes his foot against the stone, he hits her again. Then he gets his staff out and starts beating her whenever she falls down in front of him. He has no rule over his own spirit. And being a natural man, he's swift to shed blood. He's ready. I mean, if he had a sword, he was going to kill that ass. His feet are swift to shed blood. Look at Romans 3 and verse 15. Romans 3 and verse 15. Says, this is speaking of the wicked, both Jew and Gentile, all under sin. And it says, their feet are swift to shed blood. That was Balaam. Now, I'll turn back to Numbers 22 and verse 30 again. The ass responds to Balaam. Numbers 22 and verse 30.
So, Pastor?
Yeah.
I don't understand, because if an animal would have talked to me, I would have been really surprised, right? Yet Balaam, it doesn't even look like he even gives it a second thought.
It's yeah, just, that's right.
So is he just not even surprised by well, an animal talking to him? I don't get it.
He's crazy. I mean, it says there in 2 Peter that the dumbass speaking forbade the madness of the prophet. Madness means you're out of your mind. You're crazy. Balaam's going after the wages of unrighteousness. He sees that money. He wants that money so bad that it doesn't even faze him that his donkey is talking to him. Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, you would think if I was riding on a donkey and the thing started talking to me, you might step back and say, "Wait a second, this is strange here." But no, he just keeps arguing with him. Yeah, and that, I mean, that's something. Numbers 22 and verse 30. That'll just show you though what the love of money will do to you. He is so lusting after money that he. The fact that a brute beast is speaking to him doesn't even cause him to question it. Numbers 22:30. And the ass said unto Balaam, Am not I thine ass, upon which thou hast ridden ever since I was thine unto this day? Was I ever wont to do so unto thee? And he said, Nay. So the ass wisely reasons with Balaam. The ass calmly reminds Balaam that she's been his ass on which he has ridden for a long time. She's reasoning with him, and that's sometimes if you can do that with an angry, foolish man, calmly reason with them, sometimes you can diffuse the situation. And this is exactly what the ass is doing. Notice how she didn't respond back to Balaam in kind. She didn't rail on Balaam. She didn't say, God will smite thee, thou whited wall. That's what Paul said to the chief priest, not knowing that it was the chief priest. But the ass didn't even do that. Rebuking a fool would have gotten the ass a blot, is what would have happened. What do you think if the ass would have rebuked Balaam? What do you suppose would have happened to the ass? A lot more severe beating, I'm sure, because she's dealing with a fool here. Look at Proverbs 9 and verse 7. Sometimes, probably all the time, it does not pay to rebuke a fool because you're going to end up getting yourself hurt if you do it. Proverbs 9 and verse 7 says, He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. There's another, the next verse. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. A wise man will take the rebuke and be thankful for it, but a fool will hate you for it. And if you ever get to the point where nobody seems like you're doing stupid things and nobody's rebuking you, they probably realize you're a fool and there's no point to rebuke you because they're not going to risk having you turn around on them and try to harm or having them turn, yeah, having you turn on them and harm them. The ass is trying to agree quickly with her adversary before the situation escalates. That's what Jesus taught us to do. It's always good if you can bring a situation to a close peacefully. That's the way to do it. Matthew 5 and verse 25. It works that way with the law too. I mean, if you can without compromising, just pay the silly parking ticket or whatever. Just do it. Is it worth taking a parking ticket to higher court and taking time off work and all this stuff? I mean, sometimes it's just better to just agree quickly before things get blown out of proportion. Matthew 5 and verse 25. Jesus said, Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Now the ass yielded when a ruler rose up against her, and thereby the ass pacified a great offense. Look in Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 2. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 2. This is a good application of this verse. Did I say verse 2? Verse 4, I meant. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 4. If the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. If you had a ruler, whether it's a police officer for that matter, if he gets upset at you or something and gets right up in your face, if you leave not your place, in other words, if you don't go lunge towards him or try to provoke him or something, if you just stand your ground and don't leave your place, and yield and not try to be the aggressor, you pacify a great offense. But if you jump up, and it works this way with kids in school and fights and things, if some guy, starts walking towards you. You start walking towards him, and before you know it, you're going to be in a fight. If you just stand there and yield, you'll pacify a great offense, especially when it's somebody which would be some type of a ruler or something where you're not going to win. So sometimes it's best to just not do something foolish that'll get you in trouble. This is what the ass did. She yielded and pacified the offense. She then asks him if she had ever mocked him before. See, she's reasoning with him. She's like, Balaam, have I ever done this before? Have I ever done anything to smash your foot before or just bow down in the way and didn't take you where you wanted to go? I've ever done this before. Now, see, Balaam had tried to stir up strife, but the ass was slow to anger, and the ass is appeasing the strife. Look at Proverbs 15 and verse 18. Balaam's ass here is a good example of conflict resolution, good example of how to deal with problems in a way that it will cause them to come to resolution instead of come to blows. Proverbs 15 and verse 18 says, "A wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife." So the ass is appeasing the strife. Balaam's created the strife. The ass is trying to take care of it, placate it. The ass's pleasant words help to heal the situation. Look at Proverbs 16 and verse 24. Says, "Pleasant words are as an honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones." Now Balaam answers with a calm and simple nay. Look at Proverbs 15 and verse 1. So the ass has accomplished quite a task here. It says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." The ass's soft answer to Balaam turned away his wrath. Balaam was no longer spewing vitriol at this ass anymore. He wasn't hitting him. She had calmed the situation down. Balaam just simply responds with nay. Now the ass's forbearance and soft tongue prevailed in diffusing the situation. Look at Proverbs 25 and verse 15. "By long forbearing is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone." How long did the ass forbear? She got beat 3 times, and she bore long with Balaam. Now, this will be my last point. Notice the irony in this little exchange. The ass gives a rational, reasonable response, and then Balaam responds with nay. Just think about that. The ass gives a reasonable response, and Balaam responds with nay. What sound does a horse make? Neigh. The irony of that, huh? All right. Next time we will look at when the Lord opens Balaam's eyes and he sees the angel. Thanks for listening.